This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of Washington Watch. Today, we're going to take a look back on a speech from now Vice President-elect Mike Pence that he gave at the Values Voters Summit earlier this year. Now, there's no question that Americans are fed up by the incompetence and corruption of our country's leadership. During the past election season, the left presented a nominee that offered and embodied everything that is wrong with the leadership in our nation's capital. President-elect Donald Trump and Vice President-elect Mike Pence offered a change in vision and mission, a vision and a mission Americans were willing to get behind. Now, let's listen and get a little more insight into what their vision going forward is for America. Here is Vice President-elect Mike Pence's speech at this year's Values Voters Summit.
Thank you, Penny. Thank you for that wonderful introduction to Ken Blackwell, to my friend Tony Perkins. It is great to be back to the Values Voters Summit, the greatest gathering of conservative pro-family Americans in the nation. I'm truly humbled to be here. It's been a few years since I've been back. I'm so grateful for the invitation to me and to my running mate. I'm grateful that with so many of you here today, known me for some time, and you know that despite that overly generous introduction by Penny, the introduction I prefer is just a little bit shorter. I'm a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order. And it's been my high honor to work with so many of you, so many of the extraordinary organizations that are represented here. During my years in the Congress of the United States, where we stood strong for conservative values with you at our side, in my years as governor of the state of Indiana, where we moved forward a positive agenda for the family in the Hoosier state, and I promise you, from the first day I am elected Vice President of the United States of America, I will again be your champion in Washington, D.C. But despite the high nature of that office, I will tell you, the highest office I will ever hold, the highest position I will ever have, is to be Karen's husband and Michael, Charlotte, and Audrey's dad. Would you join me in welcoming my wonderful wife, the First Lady of Indiana, Karen Pence, who's with us here today. You know, it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe it was just short of 2 months ago that the phone rang with Karen at my side, 11 o'clock at night at the governor's residence, and I heard that familiar voice on the other end of the phone. We had heard the call might be coming. We had prayed through it with our kids, talked through it. We knew that we were ready to answer the call, but when it came, I heard that voice, and he just said, "Mike, it's going to be great." And I got to tell you, it has been. Every day since I accepted my party's nomination, I got to tell you, it's been an absolutely incredible experience, because you have nominated for president a man who never quits. He is a fighter. He is a builder. And until very recently, it seemed like he was out there fighting all on his own. But now this movement is coming together. This party is coming together, and we're going to elect Donald Trump to be the next president of the United States of America. I'm going to have a lot to say about my running mate before I let you go, but the contrast between the man that you heard from yesterday, a man who would have been with you here today, except at this very hour he is paying his respects and praying with the family of the late and great Phyllis Schlafly, who we remember on this day. The heart and the vision and the mission of this good man who will be a great president couldn't be a more dramatic contrast from what the other party has nominated. It truly is amazing. It's amazing when you think about it. At a time when millions of Americans are crying out for something new and different, crying out for a change of direction in here in our nation's capital, the other party has nominated the most predictable of names and a stale agenda. Well, the truth of the matter is, Donald Trump and I both know the only way you can change Washington, D.C. is by changing the leadership in Washington, D.C., and that begins the day we make Donald Trump the 45th president of the United States. The stakes in this election really couldn't be higher. The choice of this election couldn't be clearer. I mean, if you think about it, our party has actually nominated the most straight-talking candidate since Ronald Reagan. And the other party is literally running the most dishonest candidate ever. Well, as I said at the Reagan Library just a few short days ago, America picked a bold truth teller in 1980, and they are going to pick another bold truth teller in 2016. Really is remarkable when you look at the agenda of Hillary Clinton and the record of Hillary Clinton. It was Hillary Clinton who was the architect of the failed foreign policy of the Obama administration, and she means to continue it. So Hillary Clinton's record on foreign policy must be recalled. It was Hillary Clinton who helped undo all of the gains of our troop surge in Iraq, supporting this president's decision after the American soldier had won security and peace in Operation Iraqi Freedom at incredible cost. It was Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama who withdrew American forces without a new status of forces agreement and literally created the vacuum in which the terrorist organization ISIS was able to be conjured up, as it were, out of the sands of the wider Middle East to compromise large areas of those hard-fought gains. It was Hillary Clinton, who actually initiated the president's disastrous agreement with the radical mullahs in Iran. It's extraordinary to think, $150 billion to Iran, including more than $1 billion in ransom payment delivered in the form of cash, $400 million of which was delivered on the very day that four Americans were released from captivity. Let me make you a promise. When Donald Trump becomes president of the United States of America, we won't be paying ransom to terrorist-sponsoring states. They'll be paying a price if they threaten American citizens or detain or harm our people. And lastly, as Penny referred to before, it was Hillary Clinton and her State Department who left Americans in harm's way in Benghazi.
That's right.
Told a story about it being inspired by some video, even to the parents of the fallen when their remains arrived back at Dover Air Force Base. And then when she was asked about it before a Senate committee, Hillary Clinton literally said, quote, "What difference at this point does it make?" Well, let me say, as the proud father of a United States Marine, anyone who said that, anyone who did that, should be disqualified from ever serving as Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of the United States of America. As bad as the record is on the foreign stage, it just gets worse when you get closer to home. It really is extraordinary. Hillary Clinton is essentially running for Barack Obama's third term, and she boasts of it every day. Economic policies that have literally stifled the American economy. I can tell you in the Hoosier State, any progress we've made in the last 4 years has been in spite of the policies of the Obama administration, not because of them. Hillary Clinton, literally, in the midst of an economy where we have nearly 7 million more Americans living in poverty, the lowest labor participation rate since the 1970s, and the slowest economic recovery since the Great Depression, Hillary Clinton promises more of the same. More taxes, more regulation, more Obamacare, and more of the war on coal that's been stifling American energy. And her policies, we know at home, will include reimposing the executive orders of this administration, even defying a recent ruling of the Supreme Court. She promises to reimpose executive amnesty, bypassing the Congress of the United States. And Hillary Clinton's harsh criticism of the Hobby Lobby decision will continue to support mandating contraceptive coverage, even with those with religious objections. And Hillary Clinton wants to repeal the Hyde Amendment. It truly is extraordinary. And when it comes to the Supreme Court, we know what we'll get, the Supreme Court. More of the kind of judges that legislate from the bench instead of upholding our fundamental liberties. But in the midst of all of that, in the midst of that liberal agenda that we see mounting up, we get the news this morning, revealing as it is. Hillary Clinton, in remarks that were made in New York City just last night, bear repeating. And let me see where someone put them here. Take your time. Hillary Clinton said last night at a big fundraiser in New York City that the American people, the millions of Americans that are supporting my running mate, were described in the most deplorable of terms. It's extraordinary to think of it. She referred to those people as irredeemable. Well, I will tell you right now, I campaign on a regular basis with Donald Trump. I campaign all across this country for Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton's low opinion of the people that support this campaign should be denounced in the strongest possible terms. The truth of the matter is that the men and women who support Donald Trump's campaign are hardworking Americans, farmers, coal miners, teachers, veterans, members of our law enforcement community, members of every class of this country who know that we can make America great again. So let me just say from the bottom of my heart, Hillary, they are not a basket of anything. They are Americans, and they deserve your respect. I've not heard that level of disdain for Americans that I can't even repeat since Barack Obama described people that opposed him as people who cling to their guns and religion. Well, let me just say, no one with a record of failure at home and abroad, no one with her avalanche of dishonesty and corruptions, and no one with that low opinion of the American people should ever be elected president of the United States of America. We must decide here and now that Hillary Clinton will never be president of this great nation.
You're listening to a special edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. We're glad you're listening today. If you'd like to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. We're looking back at a compelling and memorable speech given by now Vice President-elect Mike Pence at this year's Values Voter Summit. Don't go away. We'll hear more from Vice President-elect Mike Pence right after this.
Should our daughters and mothers be forced to serve in the military through selective service in a time of war? Should they be required to serve in units with men in primal conditions where privacy and personal hygiene are by nature out in the open and where they are forced together in close proximity for long periods? The American military is about preparing for, fighting, and winning wars and performing specific operations against threats to the security of our country and vital national interests. Period. Anything that distracts from the achievement of these purposes should be jettisoned. This includes placing women into special operations forces or forward-based infantry positions, and including them in the selective service. For more information on the common sense needs of our men and women in uniform, visit frc.org/womeninthedraft. That's frc.org/womeninthedraft.
Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here, inviting you to join my wife, Luana, and me on an exciting adventure. Next July 29th, we'll board Holland America's a luxurious MS Uridam in Seattle for a 7-day cruise to Alaska. You'll be joined by other believers as we study God's Word and worship Him together in the midst of some of the most breathtaking beauty in all of God's creation. Alaska is truly awe-inspiring. From stunning wildlife such as humpback whales to the purple mountain majesties, America is known and loved for. You'll also hear the latest updates from Washington on the new Congress and administration. Come, fellowship, relax, worship, and explore with us on this memorable vacation experience that is sure to enrich your body, soul, and spirit. For more information or to book your Alaskan adventure, call 844-872-5155 or go to TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that number is 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the media telling you what to think? It is difficult to sort out what is true and what is false in the news. That's why Family Research Council President Tony Perkins writes a daily newsletter called The Washington Update. This daily email newsletter analyzes the most important events and topics at the forefront of the battles for religious liberty, the protection of life, and the defense of natural marriage, not only in Washington, but around the country. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from the latest election season news to underreported stories about both setbacks and successes in the fight for religious liberty, the sanctity of life, and marriage. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Visit frc.org/washington-update today to learn more and subscribe. Again, that's frc.org/washington-update.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us today. This is a special edition. It's special because we're looking back at this year's Values Voter Summit, and we're looking back at the speech given by Vice President-elect Mike Pence. Now, former Indiana governor and current Vice President-elect Mike Pence has a record of defending faith, family, and freedom, and we expect as Vice President he will continue to champion those causes alongside President-elect Donald Trump. Let's go back and hear more of what Vice President-elect Mike Pence had to say.
You know, the failed leadership of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton must be answered with resolve and with strength and with vision. And that's precisely what Donald Trump and I will do. Donald Trump has a vision to make America great again. And it all begins with making America strong again. It all begins with recognizing that we live in a tumultuous time in the life of this nation. It will be this weekend that we mark the 15th anniversary of 9/11. That was a day that I actually was in this city, as many of you who are here were as well. I found myself on Capitol Hill. I'll never forget the sights and sounds of that day. I'll never forget seeing half of the sky filled with billowing smoke. I will promise you this, the day that Donald Trump becomes President of the United States of America, we will again rebuild our military. We will restore the arsenal of democracy, and America will again stand tall on the world stage. We will stand with our allies, and we will stand up to our enemies. We cannot have four more years apologizing to our enemies and abandoning our friends. America needs to be strong for the world to be safe. And on the world stage, I promise you, Donald Trump will lead from strength. We will stand with our allies. And if the world knows nothing else, the world will know this: America stands with Israel. But in a Trump administration, we know that a strong America requires a prosperous America. And we'll make America great again under this administration, not with the higher taxes and more regulation and more Obamacare and more of the war on coal, but Donald Trump has a plan to get this economy moving again for every American. We're going to cut taxes across the board, lower marginal rates. We're going to end death taxes, and we're going to lower business taxes in America so American companies can compete with companies around the world to create jobs here in this country. And on day one of this administration, Donald Trump will sign a moratorium on any new federal regulation, and he will repeal every single Obama executive order that is stifling growth and stifling the freedom of the American people. When we elect Donald Trump as negotiator-in-chief, America will again have trade deals that work for the American worker, and we will hold our trading partners accountable to the commitments that they make in international exchange. And on day one, Donald Trump and I will end the war on coal once and for all. But the American dream unfolds for every American, beginning with a good education. And just this week, Donald Trump laid out a plan to open doors of opportunity in education for young people, particularly in the disadvantaged community. Our plan to make our schools great again is all centered on the notion that we believe that parents ought to be able to choose where their children go to school in America, regardless of their income or their area code. We'll continue, of course, to support all state efforts for traditional public education, but we'll continue to make it possible for states to use even more resources to innovate in the manner of charter schools, expanded educational choice, and this White House will support home schooling by parents all across the United States of America. And finally, Donald Trump and I know that to confront these challenging times, we have to recognize that our present crisis is not merely economic and political, but moral in nature. At the root of these times should be a realization that people in positions of authority have walked away from the timeless truths of honesty, integrity, an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, and the simple notion that you ought to treat the other guy the way that you want to be treated. We will not restore this nation with public policy alone. It will require public virtue. And that emanates from the traditional institutions of our nation, of family and religion. You heard him say it yesterday, that the center of all of our policies will be the notion of the importance and the paramount importance of the family. And also will be at the center of our policies, will be a commitment to ensure the vitality and the freedom of religion of every American and every religious institution in the land. That includes freeing up the pulpits of this nation. Donald Trump talked about it yesterday.
You've been listening to a special edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Now, don't go away. There's more of this to come from Vice President-elect Mike Pence right on the other side of this break.
Have you noticed lately that healthcare premiums and college tuition are on the rise? Some say the government should provide them to citizens at no cost. The idea of offering such services for free through government programs is understandably attractive to many. However, the utopian socialist principles behind such ideas are inherently flawed, and in reality, their ends can only be achieved through unfettered government overreach. Down through the ages, socialism has only wrought destruction, and those who propose that an American execution of the same policies would somehow reap a different result do so at their and our peril. With American interest in socialism on the rise, it is vital that we understand its foundational philosophies so that we can combat this fatally flawed government solution to a human problem. Watch former Congressman Bob McEwen lead an informative discussion about socialism and its true consequences at frc.org/McEwen. That's frc.org/MCEWEN.
Every day, more schools around the country are giving in to the transgender agenda. Boys claiming to be female are already being allowed into girls' bathrooms and locker rooms. What can parents do to stop this disturbing trend from spreading to their children's schools? Family Research Council is now offering a new resource to help. A Parent's Guide to the Transgender Movement in Education is a concise brochure that can be downloaded at frc.org/gender. To order hard copies, call 800-225-4008. You'll learn valuable tips on how to talk to your children, their teachers, school board members, neighbors, and fellow churchgoers, and the steps you can take to prevent the advancement of the transgender agenda in your school. Again, the number is 800-225-4008 to request this brochure. Your gift of just $5 will cover the cost of shipping and handling, and additional copies are available for $1. Thank you for standing strong for the family.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch. In fact, a special edition of Washington Watch. Vice President-elect Mike Pence has been sharing his and President-elect Donald Trump's direction for our country, their vision, and this is what they laid out to voters, and this is what we can expect for them to put before the citizens of this country as they take office in just weeks. Let's continue with Vice President-elect Mike Pence's speech at this year's Values Voter Summit.
I always like to say that politicians ask how things are. Leaders ask why. Donald Trump was in a meeting. It was the better part of a year ago with religious leaders from across the country. And in his own way, he said, well, I'd love to have your support, and why don't you get out there and talk about it? And they all, almost with one voice, said, well, we can't, because there's actually a provision in the Internal Revenue Code that threatens to withdraw the tax-exempt status of religious institutions, preventing them from going anywhere near endorsing or supporting a candidate for public office. It literally has been in place since the 1950s when a senator named Lyndon Johnson added it to the Internal Revenue Code. Well, Donald Trump, like a good leader, simply said, why is that the case? Anyone with more than a passing knowledge of the founding of this nation knows that the most powerful speeches that thundered about independence in the land thundered from the pulpits of this nation. Anyone who knows anything about this nation knows it was the voice of people of faith that pricked the conscience of the nation and brought an end to the sin of slavery across this nation. I've stood in the church in Montgomery, Alabama, where Dr. King railed against the injustices that took place in places all across America. And again, it was the voice of the people of faith that advanced the cause of civil rights all across America. So Donald Trump asked the question, why? And we couldn't be more proud that for the first time ever, part of our platform and a priority of the Trump administration will be the full repeal of the Johnson Amendment. We will take the muzzle off people of faith in this nation and let the voice of faith be heard. And lastly, let me make it crystal clear. People who know me well know that I'm pro-life. I don't apologize for it. I want to live to see the day that we put the sanctity of life back at the center of American law and we send Roe versus Wade to the ash heap of history where it belongs. And let me assure you, the Trump-Pence administration will stand for the sanctity of life and defend the unborn from the first day we take office. I'm truly grateful for Donald Trump's strong commitment to the sanctity of life. He understands the moral imperative of advancing the cause of life. And we've spoken of it many times. In fact, did again this morning on my way here to see you. During my time as governor of Indiana, I'm proud to say, with the support of many of you in this room, we promoted a culture of life in the state of Indiana. We instituted the first ever state income tax credit for Hoosier families who adopt. And we supported crisis pregnancy centers around the state by providing additional funding, millions of dollars, through the Real Alternatives program so that women facing crisis pregnancy have more choices before them and can choose life. I'm proud to say we were among the very first states to fully investigate Planned Parenthood in the wake of the horrific revelations that came forward. I've supported numerous measures honoring the sanctity of life and was pleased this year to sign a trailblazing bill that protects the unborn from being discriminated against because of race or gender or disability. But let me promise all of you, when President Donald Trump takes office, we will work with the Congress and we will sign into law the Pain Capable Unborn Protection Act. We will end late-term abortions nationwide. As my running mate said not so long ago, quote, "We should not be one of seven countries that allows elective abortions after 20 weeks. It goes against our core values," close quote. While Hillary Clinton and her running mate call for an end to the historic advance of the Hyde Amendment, a Trump-Pence administration will uphold the Hyde Amendment and prevent the taxpayer dollars of millions of pro-life Americans from being used to fund abortion.
You're listening to a special edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Thanks for listening in today. We're taking a look back at a very compelling speech given by Vice President-elect Mike Pence at this year's Values Voter Summit. Don't go away. We'll hear more from Vice President-elect Mike Pence right after these messages.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
Since September 11th, 2001, America has been at war.
And that's about all anyone can say with certainty about a conflict that has cost 7,000 American lives and almost $2 trillion. As long as the most basic strategic questions, such as who is the enemy and what are we fighting, remain unanswered, victory is impossible. Yet this war is eminently winnable if we remove our ideological blinders and apply basic strategic principles. Our enemy is the global jihadi movement, a modern totalitarian ideology rooted in the doctrines and martial history of Islam. America has defeated totalitarian enemies before. Providing a desperately needed dose of clarity, counterterrorism expert Dr. Sebastian Gorka shows how we can do it again in a recent talk at FRC headquarters in Washington, D.C. Dr. Gorka's bracing, troubling, but ultimately encouraging lecture, entitled Defeating Jihad, the Winnable War, can be viewed at frc.org/war.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch. Glad you're with us today. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more at that website. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. And today, a special edition, because we're looking back on a speech given by now Vice President-elect Mike Pence at this year's Values Voter Summit. Now, we're going to listen to the rest of that, and then I'll be right back after that. So don't go away. Here is the rest of Mike Pence's speech at this year's Values Voter Summit.
Anyone who knows anything about this nation knows it was the voice of people of faith that pricked the conscience of the nation and brought an end to the sin of slavery across this nation. I've stood in the church in Montgomery, Alabama, where Dr. King railed against the injustices that took place in places all across America. And again, it was the voice of the people of faith that advanced the cause of civil rights all across America. So Donald Trump asked the question, why? And we couldn't be more proud that for the first time ever, part of our platform and a priority of the Trump administration will be the full repeal of the Johnson Amendment. We will take the muzzle off people of faith in this nation and let the voice of faith be heard. And lastly, let me make it crystal clear. People who know me well know that I'm pro-life. I don't apologize for it. I want to live to see the day that we put the sanctity of life back at the center of American law and we send Roe versus Wade to the ash heap of history where it belongs. And let me assure you, the Trump-Pence administration will stand for the sanctity of life and defend the unborn from the first day we take office. I'm truly grateful I'm truly grateful for Donald Trump's strong commitment to the sanctity of life. He understands the moral imperative of advancing the cause of life. And we've spoken of it many times. In fact, did again this morning on my way here to see you. During my time as governor of Indiana, I'm proud to say, with the support of many of you in this room, we promoted a culture of life in the state of Indiana. We instituted the first ever state income tax credit for Hoosier families who adopt. And we supported crisis pregnancy centers around the state by providing additional funding, millions of dollars, through the Real Alternatives program so that women facing crisis pregnancy have more choices before them and can choose life. I'm proud to say we were among the very first states to fully investigate Planned Parenthood in the wake of the horrific revelations that came forward. I've supported numerous measures honoring the sanctity of life and was pleased this year to sign a trailblazing bill that protects the unborn from being discriminated against because of race or gender or disability. But let me promise all of you, when President Donald Trump takes office, we will work with the Congress and we will sign into law the Pain Capable Unborn Protection Act. We will end late-term abortions nationwide. As my running mate said not so long ago, quote, "We should not be one of seven countries that allows elective abortions after 20 weeks. It goes against our core values," close quote. While Hillary Clinton and her running mate call for an end to the historic advance of the Hyde Amendment, a Trump-Pence administration will uphold the Hyde Amendment and prevent the taxpayer dollars of millions of pro-life Americans from being used to fund abortion. And while we will stand by opportunities and resources for community health centers that provide comprehensive health care for women, the days of public funding for Planned Parenthood are over when the Trump-Pence administration arrives in Washington, D.C. Donald Trump and I both know the largest abortion provider in America should not also be the largest recipient of federal funds under Title X. Things will change, and we'll stand for life. And lastly, and perhaps most importantly, when it comes to life and all of our liberties, is that Donald Trump will appoint justices to the Supreme Court of the United States who will strictly construe the Constitution of the United States in the tradition of the late and great Justice Antonin Scalia. Ronald Reagan said it well, the importance of judicial restraint, the belief of our founding fathers that the role of judges was to interpret the law, not preempt the rights of the people and their legislatures by making law, is central to our nation. I said a couple days ago at the Reagan Library that there were many similarities, the broad-shouldered leadership, the plain-spoken nature, and the policies between Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump. But let me tell you emphatically, it would be more accurate to say that when it comes to the Supreme Court of the United States, Ronald Reagan's views and Donald Trump's views are identical. We must ensure that the next president making appointments to the Supreme Court of the United States of America is President Donald Trump. So we see the choice before us, the contrast between the Democrat candidate, the policies that she advances, and the policies of our team could not be more dramatic. But let me close just with a word about the man. You know, Donald Trump and I are a little bit different. Okay, we're a lot different. The long way from a small town in southern Indiana to the skyscrapers in New York City. But the truth of the matter is, I've come to know this man when the Klieg lights are off and the cameras are off over the last few months. Someone came up to me the other day and they said, you know, I've known Donald Trump for a long time and I really like him. And I said, well, I haven't known him very long at all. And I really like him. I'm telling you, he's a good man. He's a good man, and he's a man who loves his family and he loves this country in ways that few that I've ever been around in my life do. All you need to do is look at the avalanche of criticism that's fallen on him since virtually the day he entered this race and his willingness to stand again and again, his face turned like flint against the wind. That all emanates from a love for the American people and a boundless confidence in the ability of the American people to set things right and make America great again. I can tell you where that comes from. I think it comes from our personal experiences. It really does. Because while our styles are different, our ideals are just the same. And I think it comes from the fact that his grandfather immigrated to this country just like my grandfather did. His dad was a self-made man who built a business up from nothing. My dad built a small gas station business in a small town with his own hands. I mean, in a very real sense, we were both raised with the conviction that to whom much is given, much will be required. So he built on what his father had given him. He went from Queens to Manhattan Island and built buildings to the sky that are known all over the world. For my part, I was called into public service. I can't imagine what my immigrant grandfather would think of me standing before you today in this capacity. I always tell people, other than a whole bunch of zeros, Donald Trump and I really have an awful lot in common. What we have in common is really faith. It's faith in the American dream. And faith in the foundation of that dream. We have faith in the American dream because we've lived it. We both believe to the very core of our being that this is a nation where anybody can be anybody. Where if you work hard, you get a good education, you play by the rules, anybody can achieve anything in this nation. When you hear Donald Trump at this podium yesterday and you hear him in the days ahead talk about making America great again, be really clear. He's talking about making America great again for every American, bringing alive the American dream for every American son and daughter, regardless of race or creed or color. That's when we'll make America great again, when the American dream again is working for everyone in this nation. And also, it's about faith. You know, one of the more precious moments in the early days of this campaign was right after the convention. Donald Trump and I had campaigned together on that plane of his. They actually gave me a plane, and it's pretty big. People ask me, how big is it? And I said, it's pretty big, other than when it's parked next to his. But I was on his plane. Karen was with me. And while we were getting ready to part, we'd campaigned together for 2 or 3 days. And while we were getting ready to part, he said to me, hey, before we break up tomorrow, could we have some time to pray together? The next morning, we got up and hustled through the morning's activities. And I thought it might have passed out of his mind. It might have been something we forget, but no, sure enough, he came walking right up to me and he grabbed me by the hand and grabbed my wife and my daughter by the hand. And he asked Karen to pray. And she did. I'll tell you what, I think at the very core, the very heart of this good man is a faith. It's a faith in God and a faith in the American people. And what I ask you to do today is to work every day in what remains of this election to restore that kind of faith back to the center of the American government. That we can do it, but it's not going to be done without you. I mean, I'm really here to encourage you. I'm here to encourage you in the same way that others who've spoken before and will speak before you leave. Because I hope you leave here with a real burden on your heart to seize this moment in the life of the nation. Mrs. Pence and I, we answered the call when it came that night because we thought it was a calling in our life. And that's been confirmed every day in the course of this campaign. But I'm asking each one of you to feel the same calling. Leave here today and redouble your efforts to reach out to your neighbors and friends, to go to the internet, to on your Facebook page, get on the telephones, get involved in the local campaign. Work with all of your heart in the days that remain in this campaign. And as you work, like it all dependent on us, do what Donald Trump and I and Karen did that day as well. Remember to bend the knee and pray. Not so much for campaigns, but pray for our country. Pray that the people of this country would rise up as they have through different times in our history and take the reins again and turn America back in the direction of freedom and the principles of our founding. Because I still believe what I've always believed, that what was written millennia ago is still just as true today. That if his people, who are called by his name, will humble themselves and pray, he will hear from heaven again, and he will heal our land. Men and women of the Values Voter Summit, I stand before you deeply humbled and deeply honored, but I challenge you from my heart, leave here today determined to do all that we can to work and to pray, for if we do that, we will elect Donald Trump as the 45th President of the United States of America, and we will make America great again. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to a special edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, and glad you have been with us today. You've been listening to Vice President-elect Mike Pence, a speech that he gave at this year's Values Voter Summit. Important because these promises made as candidates, these ideas, this vision that was put before the voters, well, it's been ratified by voters, especially the Values voters. 81% of evangelicals voting for Donald Trump and Mike Pence. That is a high watermark. So these ideas, this vision, these policies, these initiatives that have been articulated by them over the last year, well, folks, I expect it's something we should see presented as policies and laws and the direction that this country will take. We need to be praying for Vice President-elect Mike Pence and, of course, President-elect Donald Trump and their incoming administration, and be ready to help them in moving America in the right direction again. Again, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. But let me leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, well, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com.